I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore!
Hi, welcome to this week's Film Flam. It's a new radio show that looks at movies that are not in the mainstream. Obscure movies, cult movies, or indie films, I suppose you'd be calling the old days. Foreign movies, arthouse movies. Films that matter, films that try to change things. I suppose nowadays it's very hard with the way mainstream cinema is to see these films. But, you know, there are ways. And this program will shine a light at the ones that, you know, programs that, and movies, TV and film, that change the way people think and have changed the way people think in the past and nowadays. So we're just going to look at some films nowadays that are different, that are not going to be, you know, in the other review shows, that are not going to be on the radio programs with a glib opinion about them. And I mean, everyone has their opinions about mainstream cinema, and it seems that the way in which the argument is framed by people is that, oh, there's these movies that are out this week in the cinema and that's all you can see, whereas this show wants to look at films from the past and films, you know, that are from around the world. Because it's not just Hollywood that's making films, it's also films from all over the world, Asia, Africa, America, you know, South and North America, not just Hollywood, that are making movies. So what we want to look at in the show is, you know, how cinema is not only just what's outside, you know, your Omniplex when you go in, but also on your TV. There seems to be a scaling down of the movies that we can see. And I think anyone that grew up in the 70s, 80s, and even the 90s remembers a time when you could go to the cinema and see different kinds of movies, and you could get DVDs out of your shop that were different to everything that was in the mainstream. There wasn't 20 copies of the same film facing you. There was lots of obscure ways of getting movies, and I suppose online now there is ways of getting to these movies, and this is what this week's show is going to be about. This week's show is about online distribution of movies, streaming, they're called, streaming websites. And I think when we look at streaming, there's one person that we definitely have to thank, and that is Martin Scorsese. Martin Scorsese launched a website a few years ago called Mubi.com. And Mubi was a great website, and it still is. It's a fantastic website. It's a great resource. It is the sight and sound of movie websites. It is the Kaida Cinema of websites, I suppose, or the Cannes Film Festival of websites, where other film festivals try to be like the MTV Music Awards, like Empire Magazine or Total Film. This goes for the foreign market, the classics that have been forgotten, the obscure movies, and also looks at the fact that restoration is such a huge part of film culture now, and that it stands by the auteur theory. The auteur theory in France in the 60s, 50s and 60s in Kaida cinema, François Truffaut Godard came out with the idea that it was one voice within a movie. I mean, of course, other people were helping them, but it's one voice. So very much the way in which movie works is it looks at authors, at movie directors who are, you know, definitely one single, distinctive, original voice behind the movies that are on that. And if you look at it, you can see a lot of foreign classics. You can see a lot of movies that you possibly won't get in the cinema. And also it is like a filmmaker's website, because if you look at it, it shows you what the calendar for the film festival is, what's going to be screened there at Toronto, at Cannes. I mean, it's a really great resource. And if you want to see, you know, films from the canon of the cinema, from Godfather 2001, but also if you want to find like Indonesian film from the 60s, or, you know, films from Papua New Guinea or from anywhere in the world, or Turkish cinema, this is the place to go to. They have a fantastic number of, you know, like foreign and documentaries in there, and the quality is great. The value is very good. You can get like a lot of movies for very cheap, for $6 or €6. The one downside probably is that the films that are available in the States aren't as available in Europe. So when you go to, there's certain disappointments when you first go there, that movies that you'd like to see aren't there. But there's lots of films by Lars von Trier. There's lots of films by other authors, modern day authors, that are pushing the boundaries of cinema. Films from Thailand. I mean, definitely Uncle Bon Mae is in there. You know, there's lots of movies by different directors, from Godard to Bergman, you know, to all the classics, to Fellini, to silent cinema like Dreher, and, all these filmmakers that are in there, that it's an incredible resource. So I would definitely recommend anybody who's interested in the history of cinema, in foreign cinema, and in, you know, obscure films that, you know, from different countries, from world cinema, this is the place you must go to and have a look at it, because it's just an incredible resource for online movies. Also, the other place that you should definitely check out is the new service by Curzon Cinemas in England. They're a great chain of cinemas all over London and all over Britain, and they have this amazing new website called Curzon On Demand, which allows you to download movies. I mean, even this week now, they have, you know, some really recent movies that are just out in the cinema. They have the latest Kurzmaki in there. You know, it's like your own little IFSC. And some of the movies are expensive, like some of them are like 10 quid or 10 sterling actually, but you're paying for these filmmakers to make more films, and you're helping to the ecosystem of filmmaking. This is a great website and has really good rates that you can download even here in Ireland, but also this has inspired Element Films in Dublin and the Lighthouse Cinema to launch their service, Volta.ie, which is an amazing service, which, you know, and I'm even going to talk about one of their movies that they have in there this week, Silence, in a bit. But this is a great, great, great website. It lets you stream movies into your home from Irish directors and European. I mean, there's a great selection of recent Italian, French, you know, German cinema in there that you can, you know, you can get lost in. I mean, they have a great selection also of Irish movies, of classic movies. I mean, and also, you know, a lot of Irish distributors, Irish movies suffer because they can't get distributors in local cinemas. And this is a great solution. So you have to pay for the movies, but like you get movies even like The Guard, the more mainstream movies, but also films like Adam and Paul and, you know, movies like Park that you possibly couldn't get anywhere else until here and now. So it is an absolutely amazing service, and it should definitely be supported. Like, and all this money goes back into supporting like the Lighthouse and Element Films themselves. So you know that directly, that your money is directly going into helping to make the next Irish movie. Also, another great service, you know, is iTunes. iTunes have their, not, you know, have some great movies in there. I mean, possibly the selection is a little bit mainstream for my taste. And of course, Netflix is fantastic as well. But the problems I have with Netflix and iTunes is that the people that, you know, choose the movies for that have very mainstream tastes. And I mean, like, it is quite limited in terms of some of the world cinema on iTunes isn't great. Some of the Netflix, which I think really, if you are going to join it, just join it for a month and watch as much documentaries as you can within it, because it has an amazing selection of documentaries, like endless amounts of documentaries. And I would definitely recommend that you get a lot of the documentaries, you know, that are on there. There's some fantastic ones. I mean, there's great ones about the financial collapse from both right-wing and left-wing solutions. There's lots of nature documentaries. There's all of David Attenborough's films in there. So if you haven't, you know, ever watched any of the David Attenborough's, it's a great thing to do. And that's probably what Netflix is for. It's for people really who haven't seen much films recently, haven't had time. And possibly if you haven't been watching much cinema since about 1986, which seems to be a date a lot of the movies have kind of started. It's very 80s, 90s, noughties based. There isn't very much cinema from before 1980, like the 1970s cinemas, which I think is probably the greatest era in cinema. That's very neglected within Netflix. And also I think that they, you know, that it, for the service that it is, it's great. It's great to catch up on box sets and all that kind of thing. But I really think that you have to get to the next stage and get into your movie, get into your, you know, definitely look up what's going on in the Curzon On Demand and our own Volta.ie, which are great services. But I mean, it really is showing you that no matter where you live in the country, whether you live in Laois or Offaly or, you know, wherever, that you, you know, or even, you know, parts of Cork and Galway and Kilkenny where I live, you know, there's not very much, you know, available for you to go see in the cinema because the distributors limited and they're aimed, you know, their market is teenagers a lot of the time. So what this does is this allows people who want to see something that's not for teenagers, that isn't, you know, just computer graphics on screen for like 2.5 hours, you know, like if you want to see a film that's meditative, if you want to see a film that's, you know, a bit more interesting than what's going on up in Dublin, like this definitely is a great service, especially Volta.ie. Like the recent film that they screened, for instance, Silence by Pat Collins, is an amazing film, which really is, was released simultaneously in the cinema and online. And I think it was one of the first films. There was a documentary before it, Dreaming the Quiet Man, Sharon Murray Doyle, which is also a great film. That came out a couple of weeks before it. But Silence was the first Irish feature film to be streamed simultaneously online and in the Lighthouse Cinema. And it is such a fascinating film. And I think definitely you should go and see this film. I mean, it's not, you know, to be honest, it's not one of those films that you should go to see if you're not in the correct frame of mind. If you're not in the mood for a slower type of film, then maybe not. Don't rent it or don't go to cinema to see it. But I think definitely it is something that I think actually as a movie is a great movie to watch on your own, because it has a very almost solipsistic quality to it, where it's about a man who's a sound recordist who returns from Berlin to Ireland. And basically he arrives home and we're not really told why he's searching for this, but he's told to search for some silence where there's no man-made sounds. So he goes around from Loch Inn in West Cork all the way up to Tory Island in Donegal, going through Connemara and the bogs of the Midlands. And basically we see him with his sound equipment standing inside in fields, you know, waiting to capture silence. But man-made intrusions come in, whether it's people coming to talk to him and tell him stories, or it's diggers, or it's whatever, they all come in on top of him. And I think what I really love about this film was it's very much a parable in some ways for our kind of our own, you know, the disintegration of our own community, because and the way technology and modern society has come in on top of us and that we can't escape from that. And I think what the most interesting part of it, and the scenes I most enjoyed, were ones near about island life and deserted islands. And in one scene, a man comes to the sound recordist, the main character, and asks, you know, tells him a story about all the people that left to the mainland when the island was deserted. And when they went to the island, they lost their sense of community. And I think this, to me, I found very moving, because it reminded me that in Ireland now at the moment, we're having a lot of immigration. And I think in the movie, as the man moves towards his own ancestral home, you can see that he's left Ireland many years ago, and this has affected his memory. And I think the film is about memory and identity, and how the way in which in Ireland, because of our immigration, and as we leave Ireland, a lot of people, and they come home and they can't remember things. And I'm sure everyone's had that feeling when they return home and they can't remember things about their life. And the silence, I suppose, is the silence that's going to be left in Ireland when everyone's immigrated. And I don't think this film is like very political, but it somehow gets at these kind of psychological and our psychic wounds that are now being created by the recession and by the mass immigration of people from this country. So I think it's a very subtle, you know, a way of approaching what's going on in Ireland at the moment. But it's brilliantly done, because it plays on out like a documentary. It doesn't play out like a drama. I mean, he keeps on meeting people, and it seems very kind of, you know, accidental the way he meets these people, and they tell him about their lives, and they play out almost like you're really watching this. It has a real feeling of, you know, like verite, I suppose, is the term that the Italians would use to describe it, or the French would describe the Italians in kind of post-war cinema. And it has that feel of, you know, Bicycle Thieves, or, you know, this is actually happening. It's not something that, you know, has been faked. And a lot of people in this film are not actors. I mean, much like the neorealists, they're not actors. Like the neorealist movement in Italy is a, you know, was a movement like Rome and City and Bicycle Thieves, these movies were there just to kind of help people to, you know, understand what had happened to them. And they were made by ordinary people after the Second World War. I mean, these became great directors after that. But I mean, it had that feel that real people had made the cinema about their own lives. And it wasn't, you know, and some of these are kind of the masterpieces of world cinema now. But at the time, it was just a way of understanding what was going on to them. And I really felt that Silence had that quality of neorealism, and it had a very kind of poetic quality as well. It really reminded me of a lot of filmmakers that I you know, I think like Terrence Malick was definitely in the mind of a lot of the scenes where he was wandering around nature and had that same kind of handheld, the cinematography was very handheld and had a lovely quality to it, where you really felt that it was his perspective on things. And it had that kind of dreamy, floaty quality that you probably saw in, like, if you've seen any of Malick's films like Tree of Life, or especially A New World with Colin Farrell, which is an absolute masterpiece, which is really unheralded, but is, you know, just a fabulous film. And also his Ten Red Line, or even his earlier films like Days of Heaven, like these are very, has the same kind of quality, the same kind of floaty quality. And I also know that the director is very influenced by another director called Kelly Reichardt, who is a fabulous director, and she makes films, you know, with people who are non-actors as well. I mean, and actors, and mixes it. So like She made a film with Bonnie Prince Billy, the musician, called Old Joy, about two men going up in the mountains. And if you love Brokeback Mountain, I would definitely recommend you go see this, because it deals with the same issues of male, you know, bonding and that kind of Iron John movement where men kind of, you know, try to find their inner manhood. But like this is a much superior film, Old Joy, than Brokeback Mountain. And I think it's still a lot of its tropes. And another film I think definitely is definitely worth watching is a film called Wendy and Lucy, which I would rate as one of the best films of the last 20 years, with Michelle Williams, who we all know was Heath Ledger's wife, and you know had this very, very sad life because of him. But like Wendy and Lucy is about a woman who loses a dog, and again it's this neorealist thing. It's based very much on Bicycle Thieves, again about a woman who, like the man in Bicycle Thieves loses his bike, this woman loses her dog, and it's about her going around trying to find it. And it's kind of set in kind of a rundown America. And I mean, also I think Pat Collins' film has that kind of feel of a rundown Ireland, that Ireland is, you know, like the houses are kind of dilapidated and it's kind of falling apart at the seams. And you know, I think everyone that's living in Ireland now has that sense that the country is kind of falling apart, and we're, you know, maybe we need to kind of have a look at what this not only is doing to us in terms of, you know, politics and economics, but also psychologically, and to a lot of people. And you know, and this is it's a very dark film, I suppose, but I mean it's very much about the beauty of nature as well. So like this is the kind of the recompense that Irish people always have had, is the beauty of nature, you know, in these terrible times. And it's actually very uplifting, and it would really, I think afterwards you will come away thinking a lot about not just the techniques in the film, because there's some very clever techniques involving sound, and the editing is very extraordinary, like where there's footage, but like footage from the archive mixed in with real art footage, and you know, all kind of blends together beautifully. But you come away thinking and feeling a lot about what immigration is probably doing to us, what our country has become through the lack of being able to have like a silent moment, the inability to actually be able to sit in a room and be quiet and not have to hear noise. I mean, like everyone else, you know, I go to bed listening to podcasts like this and, you know, everything else, and this film kind of tells you, no, it's okay, it's good to find a place of hush. I think even the writer Tim Robinson is quoted, I think just on the soundtrack briefly in this film, about that kind of need that we have within ourselves to find a meditative time, you know, in our lives. And I suppose silence does kind of delve into that whole area and that whole region. And it is a very, very interesting film, and I definitely think you should watch it or download it from Volta.ie. So each week, we're going to look at a film that changed the world. And our first film is probably the film that changed the world the most. And that is The Battle of Algiers by Gillo Pontecarvo. This film looks at the 1950s revolution in Algeria and the suppression of the French, all this battle. But then afterwards, it shows how this battle, even though it was lost, then led through protest to the Algerians getting their independence. But it's a drama documentary. So it shows us, you know, the explosions, the torture, the excitement. And this is a very thrilling film. I mean, this film not only was banned in France, but also Israel. And only, you know, recently it has become very kind of watched again by the Americans in the Pentagon. They had a screening after 9/11 because they wanted to show how these terrorist cells worked. It was used by the Black Panthers and even our own IRA to organize cells, because it is basically how to be a terrorist, how to run a terrorist cell. It has influenced every director who's any political dimension to their work. Most of all, Paul Greengrass has spoken often of his admiration for this film, and it's deeply influenced not only on the Bourne movies, but also on especially Bloody Sunday and his recent films about the Green Zone. So this film is just very important for Paul Greengrass. Steven Soderbergh and Traffic was very influenced by it as well. And of course, our own Jim Sheridan, who's quoted it at the start of A Name of the Father. He actually took a scene that was very similar to the Battle of Algiers and used the same way of building up to that explosion in the start of Name of the Father. The most surprisingly, the person that's quoted recently was Christopher Nolan when he was promoting the Dark Knight Rises movie. And I found this quite erroneous in some ways, in that this film, which is the great Marxist movie about colonial power being upset and conquered by the natives, was used and quoted by Nolan in his quite conservative film, where the 99% are the anarchists and the crazies, and they are seen to be the villains, while Batman and the 1% are, you know, the good guys. So, and I know there's shades of morality within that, but I found it kind of strange that this film was being quoted and used in interviews. Because his, in a way, Nolan is investigating the end game of the Occupy movement, if they actually did get what they wanted, and he goes for quite an extreme view of that. I suppose in a way it's an interesting film, but I think in other ways it's quite conservative in its outlook. And if you look at the Battle of Algiers, you see how this film is, you know, it's such a, even though it's quite an exciting film, it's a documentary in some ways. I mean, this film, even though the way in which it's shot, it wouldn't be recognizable to us as a documentary because it's shot in quite static shots. I think because it uses a lot of non-actors again, you can sort of see why people felt that this was such a potent film, and why it was such a powerful film, and why it was such a kind of dangerous film for people to see, because you really felt like you were watching the revolution actually happen in our country. And even now still, when you watch it, even though the style of it seems kind of dated, the way in which the actors are seem so of now, it seems like it's, when we watch the news, it happens almost like in this film. So when you're watching it, it's almost like watching the headlines from CNN about Syria or about Afghanistan, and you can sort of see in a way how the Americans and the Russians now fulfill maybe the role of the French within those two conflicts, and we makes you examine how you think about the Middle East. So I think it's a very interesting film. Like the thing that always stays with me is the sound within it. The use of sound is incredible. They use all the screamings from the kasbahs are almost like the score of it. And the music was by Ennio Morricone. And it's so exciting. There's a real driving force to it. And you can see definitely its influence on Paul Greengrass's style and other filmmakers' style. And it has a very kinetic power even still when you watch it. And what I love about it is it doesn't judge. It doesn't come down on one side or the other. It shows how, like, some of the people that are involved with the revolution are quite, you know, underhand. While the torturers on the other hand of the French, you can see them, the human side of them as well. And I suppose what makes it really a very even-handed movie gives it even more power, because you see how people, you know, who are doing terrible deeds, you know, they also suffer for what they do. And there is a kind of a moral equivalence about this. And even though people will watch it now and say it's like a terrorist film, it's not really. It's about what war does to a country. And a lot of people, especially in the north of Ireland, have watched this film just to sort of see how what actually happens to a country embattled. And you can even see in every probably movie made about the north, how this is the thing that always keeps coming up. But I think what's most interesting about this film is that it has kind of changed people's view of terrorism, that it's created by people from the bottom. And you can see why Israeli commanders despise it, because it reminds them of, you know, the Palestinians on their opposite are also, you know, the people that they're oppressing. You can see why people in France didn't like it at the time, but also in America, you couldn't imagine this film got a huge release or was, you know, a film that people in America knew too much about, because it was definitely tapping into something at the time that a lot of people felt that America was doing in Vietnam. So, you know, and this continuing policy that America have abroad, and that it is carrying on from the, you know, the empire building of the last century, and that's definitely apparent in what has happened in France during this film, and also now in America, when, you know, since Vietnam and in the recent wars. So it's a very interesting film to give you a good perspective on what's going on now, but you can sort of see what it was like in the 60s, and you can see the parallels. And it's really powerful when you think about the Arab Spring, and what the Arab Spring is happening in Algeria, in Libya, and how that reflects what happens in Algeria. So it's a very interesting film, you know, when you think about the historical parallels. It's a very interesting film when you think about it just as a piece of cinema, and, you know, just technically, it's just so still, so influential in terms of the way in which it has this driving energy, the way in which Pontecarvo brought all his political ideas and just pushed them into one film. And I think you wouldn't see any director nowadays maybe pushing that agenda so, you know, to the front. It would always be a little bit more ambiguous than it is here. But there is definitely in the heart of this, like, a Marxist view of what's going on in the middle of things. So I think it's a very interesting film, whether you're a Marxist, whether, you know, what besides you're on. Even if you're just a fan of Batman and you want to see where Christopher Nolan got some of his ideas for his movie and how he uses them in such a reactionary way, I think it's a very interesting thing. But also, I think the most important thing is you really see how a lot of modern cinema got this, you know, this I suppose, fetish for the, you know, the real, and for this kind of kinetic energy that's in even in blockbusters now, and where it actually comes from. And actually, funny enough, a lot of, you know, what's in our omniplexes, if you trace it back, came from this Marxist film from 1966. That's all we have time for this week. I hope you can join me next week for the next Film Flam film program.
I don't know why I came in here. I don't like these movies.
Well, I mean, I didn't know that you'd feel that way about this movie. I don't know much about movies, but if I...
Do you know the kind of movies you go to?
Well, yeah, I mean, I come and this is not so bad.